blackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Michael Jackson's children, young. You heard his daughter Paris at the memorial service speak out about her father. What would you say to them? Any advice?
God, I thought her words were so touching. Because in the little that she said, and the way she said it, and the way the family formed around her and around each other, told such a beautiful story. Because now we can see the humanity of Michael. He loved his children. He was a wonderful father. And then to see all of the family unite in a bond of love. Isn't that what we want to see?
July 15th, 2009, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program, blackelectorate.com, cedricmuhammad.com, blackcoffeechannel.com. I have to ID myself. Now that we're on iPod, you could download the Ustream app. My stuff is worldwide. So I must brand my brand. I must imprint my brand. That was Minister Farrakhan on Sunday. That was broadcast on CNN. I just got a message that Minister Farrakhan is going to speak live via webcast July 26th, 2009. The subject will be on Michael Jackson. That's from finalcall.com news. Finalcall.com news. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to speak live via webcast on July 26, 2009. His subject will be on Michael Jackson. Finalcall.com. Now, get to Michael Jackson. I had to do my tribute later for everybody else. I was on vacation, so I just have to catch up. I want to do a little bit differently, though, because I think Quincy Jones is a missing jewel in the story of Michael Jackson, certainly as an artist and also as a human being. So I'm going to leave Q in. People want to write Q out. I'm going to put Q in a minute. Now, Minister Farrakhan made a point that I thought was very powerful about Michael making a journey on the outside, perhaps from black to white, while on the inside he was going from white to black. I'm very anxious, I say desirous, to have more conversation on this show focused around theology, not so much religion and ritual, but theology, spiritual conversation, scriptural exegesis, which is not the same as the ritualism of religion. Article I sent out on Show Prep, Wall Street Journal, God and Science Don't Mix. Let me read this article, add my little commentary. I just want to open up a third eye. June 26, 2009, Lawrence Cross wrote, last week I had the opportunity to participate in several exciting panel discussions at the World Science Festival in New York City. But the most dramatic encounter took place at the panel strangely titled Science, Faith, and Religion. I had been conscripted to join the panel after telling one of the organizers that I saw no reason to have it. After all, there was no panel on science and astrology or science and witchcraft. So why one on science and religion? I ended up being one of two panelists labeled atheists. The other was philosopher Colin McKinn. On the other side of the debate were two devoutly Catholic scientists, biologist Kenneth Miller and Vatican astronomer Guy Consolmagno. Mr. McGinn began by commenting that it was eminently rational to suppose that Santa Claus doesn't exist, even if one cannot definitively prove that he doesn't. Likewise, he argued, we can apply the same logic to the supposed existence of God. The moderator of the session, Bill Brinkman, a reporter with some religious inclination, surprised me by bursting out in response, "Then I guess you are a rational atheist." Our host was presumably responding to all of those so-called fundamentalist atheists who have recently borne the brunt of intense attacks following the success of books like Sam Harris's The End of Faith and Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion. These scientists have been castigated by believers for claiming that science is incompatible with a belief in God. On the one hand, this is a claim that appears manifestly false. Witness the two Catholic scientists on my panel. And on the other hand, the argument that science suggests God is a delusion only bolsters the view of the fundamentalist religious right that science is an atheist enemy that must either be vanquished or assimilated into religion. Coincidentally, I have appeared numerous times alongside Ken Miller to defend evolutionary biology from the efforts of those on various state school boards who view evolution as the poster child for science as the enemy. These fundamentalists are unwilling to risk the possibility that science might undermine their faith, and so they work to shield children from this knowledge at all costs. To these audiences, I have argued that one does not have to be an atheist to accept evolutionary biology as a reality. Now, this is Cedric talking. We will get into evolutionary biology. I agree. I don't think you have to be an atheist to accept evolutionary biology as a reality. This statement of fact appears to separate me from my other friends, Mr. Harris and Mr. Dawkins. Yet this separation is illusory. It reflects the misperception that the recent crop of vocal atheist scientist writers are somehow atheist absolutists who remain in a cultural and historical vacuum, in the words of a recent Nature magazine editorial. But this accusation is unfair. Mr. Harris and Mr. Dawkins are simply being honest when they point out the inconsistency of belief in an activist God with modern science. Okay, now listen up. J.B.S. Haldane, an evolutionary biologist and a founder of population genetics, understood that science is by necessity an atheistic discipline. See, I don't agree with that. I don't believe that science by necessity is an atheistic discipline. As a matter of fact, before the show is out, I want to read to you a statement about how religious or how deeply scientists believe in the unseen, which by the proposition of some atheists, belief in the unseen is irrational. But every scientist has a belief in the unseen. I'll get into that a little bit later. As Haldane so aptly described it, one cannot proceed with the process of scientific discovery if one assumes a God, angel, or devil will interfere with one's experiments. God is of necessity irrelevant in science. Well, he used a phrase, this is Cedric talking now, in case you can't follow when the article ends and when I begin. He used a phrase, activist God. He said that there's an inconsistency of belief in an activist God with modern science. Well, what if the level of modern science does not approach supreme knowledge, and there is a person or persons or a being or beings whose knowledge is superior to that of the wisest scientists in the modern realm, and therefore they do have the ability to interfere with one's experiments? To be a believer in modern science, if you follow this line of reasoning, means that you believe that there's no one wiser or smarter than the current crop of scientists. I don't believe that. I think that may be irrational. There are levels of existence of the mind that I don't believe Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris or Stephen Hawking represent. So I find these kind of inconsistencies a lot with folks that claim to not believe in God. They say they don't believe in a supreme being, but really what they say is that there's no knowledge superior to what they have. So if you say that your work cannot be interfered with by any other source or power or being, what you're saying is that you have supreme knowledge. That means that you are stating that you are God. So in order for the evolutionary biologist or the modern scientist to push God out of the way, he or she has to insert themselves as the God. Do you follow what I'm saying? You can't. The question is not whether there's an activist God or not. What I'm focusing on is, why do you think that no one has the power or force to interfere with your own work? If no one can interfere with your work, that means that you're supreme. So you're the supreme being. All right, let me continue. Faced with the remarkable success of science to explain the workings of the physical world, many, indeed, probably most scientists understandably react as Haldane did. Namely, they extrapolate the atheism of science to a more general atheism. While such a leap may not be unimpeachable, it is certainly rational, as Mr. McGinn pointed out at the World Science Festival. Though the scientific process may be compatible with the vague idea of some relaxed deity who merely established the universe and let it proceed from there. See, that's a big statement. Let me read that again. Though the scientific process may be compatible with the vague idea of some relaxed deity who merely established the universe and let it proceed from there, it is in fact rationally incompatible with the detailed tenets of most of the world's organized religions. Now, I don't want to see, a scientist can parse words, and we all could sit here and parse words. I'm going to stop reading. I'm going to just deal with that. This person is saying it is possible that science is compatible with this idea of there being a creator who performed a creative act in terms of establishing the universe and then fell back, let the universe work itself from there. So Lawrence Krauss is saying science is compatible, or may be compatible, with the idea of a supreme being who established the universe and then let the universe run on its own. But he's also saying that the idea of there being a supreme being who established the universe and then let it run on its own, that is incompatible with the detailed tenets of the world's organized religions. I agree with that. I agree. I think the title of this article shouldn't be God and Science Don't Mix. It should be much of organized religion and science don't mix. He goes on to write, as Sam Harris recently wrote in a letter responding to the Nature editorial that called him an atheist absolutist, a reconciliation between science and Christianity would mean squaring physics, chemistry, biology, and a basic understanding of probabilistic reasoning with a raft of patently ridiculous Iron Age convictions. When I confronted my two Catholic colleagues on the panel with the apparent miracle of the virgin birth and asked how they could reconcile this with basic biology, I was ultimately told that perhaps this biblical claim merely meant to emphasize what an important event the birth was. Neither came to the explicit defense of what is undeniably one of the central tenets of Catholic theology. Well, how about this? What if the virgin birth is rooted in words in the Old Testament? I think it's Isaiah 9:6. I think the word for virgin in the Old Testament is really should be translated as a woman of marriageable age. A young woman of marriageable age. Bishop Shelby Spong has written on that. So could the great challenge in apparently being unable to reconcile the differences of religion and science, could that be in the fact that scripture needs to be reinterpreted? That the way the Bible was translated out of Hebrew and Greek into Latin and English and other languages, that there was something wrong in the way that was done, something wrong in the way that Christian theology was cobbled together through such events like the Council of Nicaea, that makes religion incompatible with chemistry, biology, physics, and probabilistic reasoning. So the problem is proper interpretation of the scriptures, which would not necessarily defend a virgin birth, literally, and a new concept of the supreme being and how the universe was established. Now, I'm going to just throw something on the table. If you all want to go further with this, We can do this without arguing. I don't argue. I tell you all about my friend. I'm friends with a Christian pastor. He knows I'm Muslim. We've known each other since 1987. Never had one argument because we have one rule. All of our discussions on religion have to come from the Bible as the foundation. He will allow me to mention the Quran and bring up ideas, but the bottom line position is we have to make our arguments from the Bible. Never had one argument. He has defended me from ignorant Christians, and I have defended him from ignorant Muslims because of that one rule. Now let me get into the essence of this whole issue of why there appears to be a contradiction between God and science, or religion and science. That does not have to be. There's a series of articles that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad wrote in the Amsterdam News. You can find them modified slightly in Our Savior Has Arrived. Let me read to you some things, questions, propositions. Think about this. And if you can't answer these as a scientist or as a believer, it indicates that maybe we need to educate ourselves before we start fighting with one another over quote unquote religion. May 3rd, 1958, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad wrote, "Looking at God's creation, the universe, and his creatures without number and unlimited, we have never been able to obtain the knowledge of just how God created this universe and himself. We have never known where he himself began or who was first, God or the universe. Just who is God? What is he? Is he of the essence of this universe or some invisible power, spirit, or force that has no equal or comparison in his creation? I'll read this again. Is he of the essence of this universe or some invisible power, spirit, or force that has no equal or comparison in his creation?" That's a book right there. First question, or first statement. We have never been able to obtain the knowledge of just how God created this universe and himself. May 17th, 1958, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, "Everyone looks forward to seeing the coming of God, but who has prepared to meet him?" There's another question. Why? What do we expect to see? A spirit? Well, we just cannot see spirits. We can only feel the spirit. Well, we see a man. The world does not believe that God is a man. What are we to see for God if he is not a man? And Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that to make God other than a man is to make him less than a man. Now, if you're a Muslim and you believe in the 99 attributes of Allah, if you're a Christian and you believe in a concept of God, or if you don't believe in anything and you use attributes that have a feminine or a male character, there's no attribute that you can ascribe to a God that cannot be found in a human being. Whether it's a quality like mercy, beneficence, strength, vengeance, every quality and characteristic that we use to describe a supreme being, creator of the universe, him, he, she, a we or us, you can find in a human being such as yourself. Let me keep going. The Bible reads that he is the first and the last. So does the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran, in referring to God, uses the pronoun we far more than the pronoun I. The I is used in the opening of the second chapter. I am Allah, the best knower. Surah 2, verse 1. Now, here's my question. If you're a believer in religion, you believe in Bible or Quran right now. Why is there a pronoun we, us, and I? We refers to a plurality. Us refers to a plurality. I is singular. What is that about? Look at the word Elohim in Hebrew. It's a Hebrew word, Elohim. Let us make man. Why is it not let me make man? Or I will make man. May 17th, 1958, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, he addresses himself to us as being the best knower. But what we want to know is, who is this I am? And who is this we? Is it a man or the spirit of man or a spirit without man or any living creature of the heavens and earth? Now, if a evolutionary biologist were to ask that question, you may say, well, they're trying to attack religion. Well, here's someone who taught and teaches religion, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he's asking the questions that everyone should ask. To me, who is this we? Is it a man or the spirit of man or a spirit without man or any living creature of the heavens and earth? May 24th, 1958, he writes, So it is with the truth or the spirit of truth. If there is nothing to produce the spirit, there is no spirit. Nor can we know the truth without someone to teach the truth. Where there is a man, there is the spirit. Where there is no man, there is no spirit, for the spirit cannot produce itself. Big question. Now I throw that to the scientists. What is spirit? Can spirit not produce itself? Can it produce itself? These are all scientific questions. I say God and science can mix. May 31st, 1958. Honorable Elijah Muhammad writes, a spirit cannot be seen, only felt. It is like electricity. Electricity is a power produced by friction from a substance that has such power, electric, in it, produced by the sun and the moon upon the earth. It is not seen, but we know what makes it. So it is with God. We know that God exists and is all wise, all powerful, and that this quickening power called spirit is from him. But who is this God? A spirit cannot think, but thinking can produce spirit. I got a few articles I want to read. Let me just say this from the outset. The way to reconcile God and science to me, and theology and religion, and the material and the spirit, is to know the root meaning of such words as electricity, thought. What is thought? I mean, what is thought really? What is space? What is matter? What is an atom? What is darkness? What is purpose? What is intention? What is evolution? What is an accident? I hear a lot of people say that the creation is an accident. It's a series of accidents, a cacophony of accidents. Well, if it's an accident, why can you only explain it in terms of purpose, intention, and function? See, most atheists or evolutionists will say there is no creator or there is no activist God. Yet, but really what they're saying is that there is no purpose in the universe. Is that true, though? Human beings embody purpose and intention. Why can't that be a part of the order and nature of the universe? The universe is graded. The universe has order. The universe has different levels of existence. Why is there a need to take intention and purposeness or purposefulness out of the picture? It's like what I read earlier. There's a need that, just as atheists accuse people that are believers in religion to have a need to believe certain things, scientists also have a need. Atheists, rather, have a need to believe certain things. Okay, a lot more to go on this. I want to read a comment that proves what I was saying about scientists being believers in the unseen. This whole concept of there being atheist absolutists. Much more in common between the atheist and the believer in a God than most people think. Michael Jackson salute coming up. I want to talk about Tiny and Toya. Maybe I'll do that next. What is the real essence of the human being? Is it material or is it spiritual? I think the point that the minister was making about Michael Jackson was that his outer appearance was actually a mask for something more meaningful going on the inside of him and in his mind and in his heart. That brought him into conflict with people who only appreciated the outward talent and expression of Michael Jackson's divinity, the dancing, the singing. Why is it that people who are outwardly expressive are denied the right, or it is seen as out of character, when they begin to assert and pronounce intention, spirit? An inner will. What is it? Why is it that athletes are prevented from or not encouraged to be conscious or to exert their power in another field. See, I think it's kind of funny. People complain that artists tend to be culturally degenerate and corrupt, yet when they try to be assertive in terms of consciousness, they lose their magnetism. Can you really have it both ways? We'll be right back. I'm gonna play some damn music in a minute. I know some of y'all are getting zoned out. I'm up here talking about atoms, intention, electricity, purpose. But Lawrence Krauss said a scientist can be a believer, but professionally, at least, he can't act like one. Why is that? Yup, let's get into it. Tiny and Toya, you all watching this? The Bet Against Us channel, a.k.a. BET. I like this show. I'm going to continue to watch it. We can build on it. As long as this thing runs, I'm going to be there Tuesday night. Or it will be DVR'd. Now, one segment I want to focus on. Now, those of you that don't know, Tiny is the, I don't want to get into the official status, but she's the significant other. Committed relationship with T.I. And Toya is the ex-wife of Lil Wayne. So the show revolves around them, what they go through. Very interesting dynamic to hear the perspective of a woman that's in a relationship or just recently out of a relationship with someone that prominent in the industry. Tiny, who was a member of Xscape, remember that? Just kicking it. She evidently has put her music career on hold at the request of T.I. or in order to please T.I. This was news to me. I thought she was still writing hit records. Very successful songwriter. After her career in Xscape, I think she wrote No Scrubs. She's written a lot of songs for other people, other singers that you may not even know she was the one that penned it. So she gave that up, put that on ice, pressed the hold button to make T.I. happy, according to the show. She's not fulfilled, evidently. This is a clip from Tiny and Toya, BET.
Hey, babe.
Hey, Mom.
I just dropped the kids off. Major and King's upstairs with Zanique.
Oh, okay.
What you doing in here?
What Major doing? Listening to some
you
music.
You doing your music again?
Well, not quite, Mom.
Not quite.
Well.
I heard y'all's song on the radio coming back from out of town.
What song?
Just kicking it.
Mama, you crazy about the Xscape.
I love Xscape. Yeah. Y'all some singing girls. Are you going to just give it up?
Pretty much, Mama, for right now.
Why?
I'm just not.
That is in your blood.
I know it. But, I mean.
You know, you're just like your daddy. And when he's up on stage, he comes alive. He forgets everything else, but he don't forget his songs. That's his whole life. And that's your life. It's always been your life. Been your life since you was 14, 13 years old.
Mama, I know that, but you won't let this escape.
I understand you have kids and stuff like that.
Go.
I understand that. I just love your singing, baby. You got the prettiest voice in the world.
Thank you, Mom.
I'm telling you.
Wait a minute, let me ask you something. You had a man that gave you everything, gave you the world, gave you everything you could possibly
ask for. What he
looked
like?
It ain't about what he looked like. And he give you the world, give you everything.
Right.
He want to marry you. He want to be with you. He want to marry you. Like, y'all got kids or you know.
Whatever.
And he say,
he down.
I just don't want you to work. Tip doesn't really care for me to work. It's a tough one. You can lose your relationship because you want to go work. You just got to ask yourself it. How much is it worth?
Wait, this is the question. Did I have a
career? You had a career, and then the career went south.
I think that I could do that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but listen, you need but, your own identity.
Right. Right.
Your own identity. Sometimes you need to, you have to find you. You can't,
I mean,
you can't be complete to somebody else if you,
if you ain't complete to yourself.
Right. If you are not fulfilled yourself, what are you bringing?
Hey.
Hey.
I'm not going to take up much of your time.
Yeah.
How do I do the new things that I'm doing and still have a good relationship? I have everything at home in him except working, going out, venturing, doing things that I feel like,
if you want to
you
do
know, that,
that
I might be good at.
How good are you at making grown woman decisions that are different than his mindset?
I think I'm pretty good.
Then you might have to prove it on this one.
Want me to go back on the road or whatever, and I started going back on the road, and we kind of split up for a minute while I was doing that.
Uh-huh.
So then I had to go back. I told you so. See, you didn't need, you shouldn't need that. No way. You didn't have to.
What makes him think that it would be desirable to you to do nothing? Even though you're financially able to do it because of him, what do you think makes him think you want to do that? That doesn't sound like what you want to do.
It's a nice environment still without doing anything, but I just see that I have the opportunities to do things, and I'm interested. I want to do it.
Have you really decided you don't want to be a well taken care of do nothing girl?
I just want something else.
Okay. It's just that a lot of times in a relationship, particularly with women, and particularly with women who are associated with big, powerful men, the women believe that some kind of way love is supposed to mean I cut off my life so that it gives life to yours. Well, it doesn't take cutting yours off to give life to his. Mm. He got a great life. He's got a great woman. He's got a great future. And that future could include some stuff that he doesn't like, but it ain't gonna kill him. And I guess you have to decide if his comfort is your goal or if it is what's good for both of you is the goal.
I think some of the things Dr. Elmo had to say kind of helped clarify some things for me. I want to get involved in music again, but I'm still a little worried about Tip getting angry.
I didn't know. Now, in fairness to T.I., you know, his side of the story is never given, and he's locked up right now. So I may have to be T.I.'s lawyer. I like this show, Tiny and Toya. I'm going to keep watching it, along with Jacob's Cross. Here's what I think is going on as a factor. I don't think that, and the men can answer, I don't think that T.I. wants to control Tiny as such, as much as he does not want his relationship to represent a continuum of what he does for a living, where he's actually competing with his wife. I mean, there may be nothing less attractive than competing with your significant other in a particular discipline or field for some benefit. I mean, if you holler if you hear me. I don't think T.I. wants her to be unhappy. But why would you want to deal with, when you want comfort and consolation, why would you want your wife to be all over TV, networking with the same people, competing for the same awards possibly? I mean, the music industry is a very demanding field. When I say demanding, I don't mean like it's harder than anything else. I mean, it requires 24... It's a consuming field. It's not just performing the art, making the art. It's the networking. It's the appearance that you have to keep up. It's very demanding in very emotional and social ways. And I know men in the music business, let me just say this. The artist that I worked closely with or that I knew, the main female companion or confidant in their life was a woman who was not actively in the music business. And it was for the same reason. You want a break. So without getting T.I.'s, you also want separation, rather. This is a business that can be very gossipy, divorces rampant. You have a media eye and coverage that can be glaring. So to have two people in the same industry under that same spotlight and that magnifying glass, to me, it just compounds the problem, making it more harder for you to obtain what you want, which is peace of mind, privacy, etc. So I actually think, my suspicion is that T.I. doesn't want Tiny actively involved in the music business for that reason. I don't think it's to oppress her, to control her. That's just my thought. Now, T.I. is in jail. He's going to be made to appear a certain way. Now, she's not happy. Let's deal with Tiny. Tiny is obviously not happy with this arrangement that she has with T.I. to put her music on ice. I just don't know how you can get around this, other than maybe Tiny and T.I. doing something together, starting a publishing company together or doing songs together for other artists. I don't know how to fulfill what she wants in a way that doesn't compromise what he's looking for, which is a separation and peace of mind in a space that has nothing to do with the music business. This is what I think. I never met one artist that wanted to marry another artist. They wanted to do other things, but they didn't want to marry him. Not one. Never met one. Whole life. You'll usually find a high school sweetheart, someone that they met in the industry who's no longer active. Never met one. Give me your comments. Is T.I. being oppressive? Is Tiny being submissive? How do we reconcile what she's looking for with what he wants? Can it be reconciled? July 15th, 2009, Tiny and Toya. This is my show. Maybe we'll get to Toya next week. I just wanted to focus on Tiny. Let me run it back. This is Tiny's situation. She's talking with her mother here first.
Hey, babe.
Hey, Mom.
I just dropped the kids off. Major and King's upstairs with Zanique.
Oh, okay.
What you doing in here?
What Major doing? Listening to some
you
music.
You doing your music again?
Well, not quite, Mom.
Not quite.
Well,
I heard y'all's song on the radio coming back from out of town.
What song?
Just kicking it.
Mom, you crazy about the Escape.
I love Escape. Yeah. Y'all some singing girls. Are you gonna just give it up?
Pretty much, Mom, right now.
Why?
I'm just not.
That is in your blood.
I know it. But, I mean.
You know, you're just like your daddy. And when he's up on stage, he comes alive. He forgets everything else, but he don't forget his songs. That's his whole life. And that's your life. It's always been your life. Been your life since you was 14, 13 years old.
Mama, I know that, but you won't let this escape.
I understand you have kids and stuff like that.
Go.
I understand that. I just love your singing, baby. You got the prettiest voice in the world.
Thank you, Mom.
I'm telling you.
Wait a minute, let me ask you something. You had a man that gave you everything, gave you the world, gave you everything you could possibly
ask. What he looked
like? I mean, you love him. Y'all, it ain't about what he looked like.
It ain't about what he looked like.
This your man. This your man. And he give you the world, give you everything.
Right.
He want to marry you. He want to be with you. He want to marry you. Like, y'all got kids or you know.
Whatever.
And he say,
he down.
I just don't want you to work. Tip doesn't really care for me to work. It's a tough one. You can lose your relationship because you want to go work. You just got to ask yourself, how much is it worth?
Wait, this is the question. Did I have a
career? You had a career and then the career went south.
I think that I could do that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you need your own identity.
You
have to find you. You can't.
I mean,
you can't be complete to somebody else if you ain't complete to yourself.
Right.
If you are not fulfilled yourself, what are you bringing?
Now, this is Tiny with the relationship expert, this doctor.
Hey.
Hey.
Now, I'm not gonna take up much of your time.
Yeah.
How do I do the new things that I'm doing and still have a good relationship? I have everything at home in him except working, going out, venturing, doing things that I feel like
if you want to do know,
that I might be good at.
How good are you at making grown woman decisions that are different than his mindset?
I think I'm pretty good.
Then you might have to prove it on this one.
Want me to go back on the road or whatever, and I started going back on the road, and we kind of split up for a minute while I was doing that. So then I had to go back. I told you so. See, you didn't need, you shouldn't need that. No way. You didn't have to.
What makes him think that it would be desirable to you to do nothing? Even though you're financially able to do it because of him, what do you think makes him think you want to do that? That doesn't sound like what you want to do.
It's a nice environment still without doing anything, but I just see that I have the opportunities to do things, and I'm interested. I want to do it.
Have you really decided you don't want to be a well-taken care of, do-nothing girl?
I just want something else.
Okay. It's just that a lot of times in a relationship, particularly with women, and particularly with women who are associated with big, powerful men, the women believe that some kind of way love is supposed to mean I cut off my life so that it gives life to yours. Well, it doesn't take cutting yours off to give life to his. Mm. He got a great life. He's got a great woman. He's got a great future. And that future could include some stuff that he doesn't like, but it ain't gonna kill him.
Got a great comment from KC Austin, Texas. He says, don't forget the powerhouse couple, Jay-Z and Beyonce. Maybe the exception to the rule. I feel you on the separation. My wife wants to help me get my law practice off the ground. I just don't know. Well, Jigga and Beyonce, I think that's a business move. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know too much about that relationship, but I don't think Jay-Z is looking for comfort and companionship in Beyonce as much. Or should I say that? I think he's looking for that, but he's also keenly aware of how that relationship is good for business. Jay-Z began talking about Beyonce as the baddest chick in the game. I mean, this, I know I have an hourly intro coming up. Maybe I'll save that. You don't talk about the woman that you want to marry to give you consolation and companionship as the baddest chick in the game. I got the baddest chick in the game wearing my chain. Nah, the wife is something else. Peace of mind, quiet, content, help meet. That's what you're looking for. Jigga loves Beyonce. I believe she gives him consolation and companionship now. But at first, she was the baddest chick in the game. We'll be right back.
Sobering, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.
When people say to me, how do you get through life or each day, it's the same thing. To me, there are three things we all should do every day. If we do this every day of our life, you're going to have, what a wonderful, number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions moved to tears. Could be happiness or joy. But think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Change
for once in my life. Gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turn up the collarbone, my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street, but not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them? Disregard a broken bottle top and one man's soul. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one yet to know. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways, and no message gonna bend.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Coffee Channel.
Michael Jackson's single most valuable asset may be the rights he owns to hundreds of Beatles songs. CNN's Mary Snow is working that story for us. And Mary, obviously, it's worth quite a lot. What are you finding out about that?
Well, Suzanne, while Michael Jackson is reported to have left behind hundreds of millions of dollars in debt, he also has rights to what's considered a cash cow. One of Michael Jackson's prized assets, his ownership rights to a catalog including more than 200 Beatles songs. Ryan Shinman, who owns an entertainment company that partners musicians and celebrities for ads, estimates the catalog is worth about $1.5 billion.
It's valuable enough that he's been able to borrow against it all these years. He's been able, you know, to go to the banks, to go to different people, because they realize how valuable it is.
Jackson owns half. The other half is owned by Sony in a joint venture called Sony ATV. The company declined comment on the future of the song catalog that came about after an aggressive move Jackson made in 1985. He outbid Paul McCartney for the rights to roughly 250 Beatles songs, causing a rift between Jackson and McCartney, who collaborated on hits like Say, Say, Say.
Just look at my face, this tears ain't drying.
In 2006, McCartney was quoted as saying, "You know what doesn't feel very good is going on tour and paying to sing all my songs. Every time I sing Hey Jude, I've got to pay someone." After Jackson's death, McCartney put aside differences, writing on his website, "I feel privileged to have hung out and worked with Michael. He was a massively talented boy man with a gentle soul." Reps say McCartney has been unavailable to comment on what might happen to the Beatles catalog. One estate attorney says there are a number of possibilities, but that it all depends on the kind of contract Jackson had with his business partner.
Certain partnerships have exit clauses. If a partner dies, then perhaps the other partner can buy the deceased partner out. Other partnership contracts are completely silent as to what happens if a partner dies.
Now, another attorney we spoke with says one big unknown is how much Jackson owed Sony and what impact that has had on his stake. And then, of course, the other big question is the debt Jackson left behind overall and how that affects his estate. Suzanne?
July 15th, 2009. Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. It's on. It's the tribute like no other. Matter of fact, I'm so gangster, I'm going to read that point about science and religion over arguably his best album. I'll throw it out there to you all. I don't know what you think. I can't decide which album was better, Off the Wall or Thriller. I'm going to bring Quincy Jones to the witness stand in a minute. Get gangster with it. This is from the book This Is the One by Jibril Muhammad. Makes a point about science and religion supposedly being irreconcilable. He writes, such people will usually tell you that science deals only with perceptible and verifiable realities. Therefore, the findings of science are superior to the results of religion, which they say concerns that which cannot be demonstrated. Is this so? Is it not true that the scientists of this world depend on the unseen, universal reign of law that is inherent in everything, everywhere? Is not their ability to reason rooted in the belief, if not the conviction, of the rationality of existence, which is grounded in that which they cannot see with the physical eye? What prevents us from believing that there may be dimensions of existence transcending the level we are now aware of? And that's my point. In the article that I read by Lawrence Krauss, he says that an activist God is incompatible with science. He writes, as Haldane so aptly described it, one cannot proceed with the process of scientific discovery if one assumes a God, angel, or devil will interfere with one's experiments. God is of necessity irrelevant in science. How? Unless you're saying that you're God. Why can't a God, angel, or devil interfere with your experiments if you're not the supreme being yourself? See, that's called raising ignorance to the level of knowledge. I'm going to take what Brother Jibril said and work with it again. He says, is not there, talking about the scientist, is not their ability to reason rooted in the belief, if not the conviction, of the rationality of existence, which is grounded in that which they cannot see with the physical eye? Who can see an atom? This is me talking now. Existence is rooted in unseen realities. Now, this is the question juxtaposed to what I read from Lawrence Krauss. And by the way, Lawrence Krauss is a cosmologist and a director of the Origins Initiative at Arizona State. He says, Jibril writes, what prevents us from believing that there may be dimensions of existence transcending the level we are now aware of? Why can't there be an activist God that doesn't violate the laws of mathematics, physics, chemistry, and biology? Maybe your understanding doesn't grasp all the laws that govern chemistry, biology, mathematics, and physics. How about that? If you're not the supreme being, that means that you have a blind spot potentially from someone who knows more than you. An easy way to look at this is to consider the number of species that scientists have not been able to identify. Jibril writes, we are all acquainted with the fact that existence is graded. That is, we observe and experience matter such as stone and sand, life such as insects and plants, and animal life such as dogs and camels, as well as humans. We also know that the human mind has grades. There is nothing irrational in believing that there are realms or mental levels beyond the experience most of us live on. The most intelligent men, fully aware of the achievements and contributions of science, were and are believers in the divine supreme being with all that such belief implies. Again, such people will usually tell you that science deals only with perceptible and verifiable realities. Therefore, the findings of science are superior to the results of religion, which they say concerns that which cannot be demonstrated. Is this so? Is it not true that the scientists of this world depend on the unseen universal reign of law that is inherent in everything, everywhere? Is not their ability to reason rooted in the belief, if not the conviction, of the rationality of existence, which is grounded in that which they cannot see with the physical eye? That's a lot to chew on. Let's get to Michael Jackson. Rolling Stone has a real nice special commemorative issue. But I really enjoyed the Wall Street Journal's music editor, rock and pop music critic. He wrote an article on July 1st, said, called How Jackson Did It. Let me read that. He says, at the heart of Michael Jackson's musical legacy are two albums. And you know what they are. I just want to know from you all, which album do you think is better, Off the Wall or Thriller? Now, I'll say this, the most anticipated album ever, most anticipated album ever was not Off the Wall or Thriller. It was Bad, ever. Everyone was waiting for Bad after Thriller came out. Most anticipated album ever is Michael Jackson's third album. It's not his best, though. At the heart of Michael Jackson's musical legacy are two albums that total less than an hour and a quarter's music worth of music. Both are rightfully considered among the best pop albums of their era. Off the Wall or Thriller? You all let me know which one you may be feeling more. Let me go to Off the Wall. That was Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. That's the first song on the album. Off the Wall was released August 10th, 1979. Off the Wall, released in 1979, and Thriller, issued 3 years later, turned Jackson from a teeny bopper into an adult pop entertainer and ushered in this international superstardom. Both were overseen by Quincy Jones. Girl. Speak to him, Michael. I can't even read, brother. Go ahead. Now, how do you go from singing about Ben to talking like, girl, you had to have some help? Damn it, let me start this from the top again. I'm going to fall back. Check out how Michael says, girl. You know, somebody had to work with him on that. Nothing you can do. Don't try to fight it. Relax your mind. Lay back and groove with mine. You gotta feel that heat. And we can ride the boogie. Yeah. I'm sorry, folks. One more time. We gotta talk about this girl.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.